Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and we are bringing you this on Friday morning, and I am joined, as always, by Kyle Devitt and by a special guest, former GM of both the Denver Outlaws and Chesapeake Bayhawks, Ryan Reese. Thank you, fellas, both for joining us on a beautiful Friday morning.
Thanks for having me.
As usual.
Yes, Kyle, as usual. It is all par for the course for you. But let's just dive right into the action, because big weekend in MLL lacrosse, either the second or third game for a lot of teams this past weekend, and a lot of action around the league. You know, Reese, we'll start with you, and you know, one game that had particular significance insofar as, you know, potentially making some hay, making some moves early in the season, the Denver Outlaws, 14-10 winners over the Boston Cannons in Boston, dropping the Cannons to a winless start. As it goes, the Denver Outlaws are, I believe, undefeated. So, you know, this is a team that you're familiar with. You got an opportunity to see this game. You know, what were your thoughts on how it played out, generally speaking? And I guess, you know, what's the issue with the Cannons when you just kind of look at their slow start?
Yeah, you know, watch that game and, you know, pretty closely. First of all, I think Boston played a lot better than they have been playing all year. I think this was, you know, by far their best game of the season. But, you know, it just wasn't good enough to beat Denver. I think Denver's coming in looking very good. You know, I think every season we come in kind of looking for them to, you know, miss a beat, start slow, and they never do. You know, I think Boston right now is getting some players back. I think getting more continuity in their lineup, I think will help them along the way. You know, I don't think it's time to panic yet for Boston. Maybe after this weekend it might be time to panic. But, you know, against Denver, they're a good team. They're deep. You know, Drew Snyder had a great game, scoring 5 goals. You know, Brendan Mundorf was pretty quiet, but, you know, the ball moves very quickly. Jesse Schwartzman played great for them. So that was a tough game, but I do think Boston played their best game of the season. And, you know, I think for them, they got to improve a little bit every game. But, you know, they got to get some wins here, or else it's going to be a little bit too late.
Kyle, you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's not time to push the panic button. I think it's definitely time to push it right now.
What is the panic button equal at this point in an MLL season?
I think it equals...
It's a large red button. You can push it anytime.
Yeah. No. I think it...
It's like the opposite of that Staples Easy button.
Yeah. I think it ejects the coach, if I'm honest. I that sounds crazy, but I think it probably does if they lose this week. You know, Dwyer's probably sitting there looking at it going, I think I should probably push that. I don't know if I should push that. I think I'm going to push that. I don't know if I should push that. You know, and if they go 0-5, I mean, he's going to be out of there if they go 0-5. But 0-4, you could be out of there at 0-4. I mean, it's crazy that we're talking about stuff like that in MLL where, like, job security is paramount. And part of the reason these college coaches go in the MLL is to have their job security. But, I mean, you know, B.J. O'Hara got fired a couple years ago. You know, it could happen. I don't know how patient or impatient the owner is, but I've heard rumblings, at least.
Well, and Brian, I mean, I'm not going to ask you whether or not you think the Cannons should part ways with their coach, but you are the type, you know, you have the experience and you have the perspective on. I guess my question to that solution would be, is that enough? Is a coaching change in this league, you know, potentially enough or not even potentially, like, likely enough to, you know, turn a season around? Or because I think there's some perception that it's a players' league, you know, coaching matters only so much. There's not a ton that you can do as a coach to change the direction of a team. So, you know, to me, a panic button move is much more so a significant trade. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got both, you know, hit on the head. There's only so much you can do as a coach in the MLL to kind of get things together, but, you know, it does start with the coach. You know, it does start with the attitude and the plan that you have in place and the culture you have. You know, is it a kind of fix-all move? No way. But, you know, for a proud franchise like Boston that is used to winning and expects to be in the playoffs every year, it might be something that, hey, you know, wake up, guys. This is important, and we're going to hold people accountable. And, you know, if they decide to do that and that's the first move, you know, maybe wake people up a little bit and they decide to play a little better. But, you know, in Coach Duffy's defense, he hasn't had his, you know, full lineup at any game yet. I mean, his defense, you know, they got Mitch Pulisic back last week, which really helped. But they're still missing some key parts down there. You know, they're going to get their college guys in too, which I think is going to be their biggest help. I think getting a guy like Cam Flint and, you know, some other players like that that can be two-way guys, do a lot of the grunt and dirty work, that's going to help them because they are, they have the same kind of roster in place, but they are a little bit older. You know, Paul Rabel's still, you know, the best player in the league, if not, you know, one of the best players. Ryan Boyle, you know, they still got plenty of talent. So I think they need to, you know, have those guys to do that kind of the hard lifting, heavy lifting, the grunt work, the ground ball, you know, running from defense to offense and, you know, maybe get some easier goals in transition. And a guy like Cam Flint and Scott Rowland will definitely help that.
And then, well, go ahead.
I mean, I just want to be clear. I'm not saying they should. I'm saying they could. That's not what I'm not saying they should do that. That's not my position officially. Because I have to go to these games and I don't want to get beat up.
Well,
so I'm not saying they should. But they could.
Okay.
Yeah, and you're right. I don't think they should. But I think, you know, when you're a team owner or you know general manager or whatever you are, has to make that call. You know, it's not easy to do. But it's kind of, and you can't. It's really hard to kind of revamp the entire roster. You know, right now in the MLL. So I guess the number one thing, the quickest thing, maybe the easiest thing to do is change coaches. Again, I don't think that's the answer for the team right now. I just think they got to get their team together. But, you know, with the NLL going on or the NLLing, as Kyle likes to call it, and, you know, the college guys missing, you have to be prepared for what's going on in your team and knowing you're going to be missing a few guys. And you can't start the season 0-4. You can't do it. You got to win at least two of these games.
And that's kind of where the surprise comes in for me, because I think that when you looked at Boston, they were, you know, the presumption was that they were going to be at least slightly less affected by some of this because of the consistency of their roster in the offseason than some of the other teams in the league. And, you know, not necessarily pointing the finger at Denver, because I think, you know, outside of there are a few guys that play in the NL that they were relying upon, and I don't think there was a huge expectation that the rookies were going to make a significant splash. But, you know, all of it's leading to, you know, my question for you, Brian, which is, how surprised are you by the fact that, you know, Denver 2 years in a row has been able to make these moves to lose significant pieces, you know, presumably or, you know, seemingly losing trades, and yet you could argue they were better, you know, you could argue they were better in 2012 than they were in 2011, and it looks like, you know, after the start they're off to now, if they're not better, they're certainly not far behind where they were last year.
Right, I think the biggest thing is they're still the core of the team and the leadership. You know, they're not going to get rid of guys like Brendan Mundorf and Jesse Schwartzman and Lee Zink. You know, those kind of guys are the core of the franchise, and they're going to provide the leadership. And I think it's the pieces you put around them. And I think with Denver, the one thing you look at them, you watch them play offense, they're so good off ball. You know, the guys like Bach with cutting, and, you know, they have Zach Greer back. He scored four, you know, the easiest goals you'll see, you know, scored in the MLL. But those are the kind of goals that he can score, you know, getting ground balls, extra man cutting. They're very dangerous off ball, and they're a team that moves the ball very well. You know, you trade Keith Pouillon, which I thought was, you know, a little bit of a mistake to get Jeremy Boltis. But, you know, again, Boltis is a guy that is a great feeder, and they have guys in the midfielders who are constantly moving, cutting, and trying to get the best shots. And, you know, as long as that ball stays hot and they continue to be unselfish, I think they'll be, you know, a pretty competitive team.
Well, keeping it hot, Kyle, we're going to go to you next. The Hamilton Nationals win a one-goal affair versus the New York Lizards in Toronto, well, Hamilton, in Ontario, southern Ontario somewhere. And I guess, you know, this is a Nationals team that, because of the NLLing phenomenon, I think because of some of the other issues that, you know, they had in the offseason, there were some question marks surrounding. And obviously coming off of, you know, two relatively down years. But there was also some faith, I think, that Dave Huntley was going to bring a little bit of a spark. And some of the moves that they made, you know, particularly I think one of the things that people were looking forward to was their draft class showing up, kind of the inverse of what we were talking about here with the Lizards. But, you know, their draft class, by and large, has not shown up. And they've put in some impressive results. What are your thoughts on this game in particular and how the Nats are shaping up through mid-May?
Well, I mean, to touch on your rookie point, they are going to activate Reed Acton and Tucker Durkin for the game that kicks off in about an hour and 45 minutes, about 3 hours north of me.
So this is the May 2-4 game? They did this last year, right?
Yeah, this is the kids game, as they call it on the podcast, on the broadcast, which I don't really understand. All I know is quote of the year so far from a commentator is Shanahan saying there's nothing more Canadian than Tim Hortons, which the truer statement has never been made in an MLL game. That's a fact. Just going by the play of the game, I mean, Hamilton jumped out. You know, Hamilton jumped out to an early lead. We talked on the conference call a little bit. Spallina, you know, Karolunas has not been playing well. I noticed it because I'm a Karolunas, you know, champion. I love Karolunas' game, takeaway checks, all that stuff. I feel like he's been figured out down low, and guys know now that they can just run past him and take his check because it's not strong enough. It's like, you know, you tell your youth kids to do, like, get the ball behind the cage and run, take the check and see where you are after you get the check. You know, so hopefully you still have the ball and you can shoot and you're at 5-5. That happened a couple times in this game. But then again, you know, not Long Island, New York, sorry. New York is playing good lacrosse, especially compared to, I mean, they had a good end to last year and they limped into the playoffs. They had a great game. That just got taken away from them in the semis, but you know, they're playing better as their pieces come in. I thought Mark Matthews was excellent in this game. You know, Gibson was excellent in this game in his I believe second game back. He played really well. I just think that they need, you know, they need Rob Pinnell. They need another star. They need Seabald to come back. Those two guys are maybe two of the best players coming in back into the league that haven't played yet. And that's going to make a big difference. That being said, you know, New York fought hard for most of the game. Hamilton jumped out to early leads, easy goals. I mean, real easy goals to put them up. Lots of power play goals or mid up goals all over the place in this game. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 man up goals. I mean, that's big considering New York hasn't scored a man up goal this year until this game and they scored 3. So that was kind of a big deal for New York. That was a nice step forward, but the two-pointer that won it was, I don't know if I'd call it dubious, but I don't know if it should have gone in. I like just watching replays of it on the grainy YouTube feed. Ball kind of like Crowley gets it, kind of creeps away from his guy and takes one of those hard overhand, like get out of my way shots, and it goes in and it wins the game. And it's a two-pointer. It was crazy. It was a crazy end of the game. You know, you try to watch the replay 100 times to see how the ball went in, but it just went in, and it went in on Drew Adams' shot he normally saves. So, I mean, it's a tough one for New York, but it's a great one for Hamilton. They keep them alive.
You mentioned, you know, the power play goals, and certainly that was a big part of it. Kevin Cunningham had one, and I guess my question is, and I know it's early, but is he a guy to watch as being one of those kind of, you see it every year, whether it's Jeremy Sieverts or Pete Poyon or anybody else, you know, there is a whole litany of guys that, you know, break out in their second season when they finally get an opportunity. Is he a guy that we should be looking for to make that jump this year, in your opinion?
I think this is his best game he's played for sure. And, I don't know, with all the guys coming back, like Jameson and Keogh, I don't know if there's a lot of room for him, but I think he's still going to be on the roster. I think the Nationals' biggest weakness that no one has attacked is their poles. I really don't understand why you don't attack their poles. No team has done it very well. Mark Matthews scored every time he ran at a guy. You know, I don't understand why teams didn't do it. The one thing they do well as a defense, a team defense, is they protect the cylinder. You know, they protect the area around the crease that stretches all the way to the 2-point line. They don't let you get to the middle of the field. They cut the field in half. You know, they ride you down the roof, and they do it really well, probably better than almost any team that I've seen so far.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, they really play well in their strengths. And getting back to the coaching thing, Nate Huntley's a guy who gets the MLL and who knows what to do to make his team successful. You know, that kind of, you know, pushing transition, speed going from defense to offense, trying to get some 504s and 605s. They run that better than anybody, and using Brody Merrill to kind of stay in there and score one extra man, and then maybe, you know, kicking the ball in a few times on 606. That's their kind of recipe, you know, and that's what, you know, he does very well, and that fits to their strengths. And, you know, they're back doing that this year, which makes them, you know, a lot more dangerous than I think they have been. But going back to the defense, I think, you know, Hamilton's defense is maybe a little bit underrated. I think last year, Lovejoy, you know, I thought he was, you know, probably, you know, played pretty well, and they're going to get Tucker Durkin this week. So their poles are good, but now they have Brody Merrill going back to kind of playing that that free safety position where he can just roam around and intercept passes and kind of create havoc. and that's what he does best. And you know, but you got to find a way to. I think you're right. Their weakness is probably you need a good dodging attackman, and if you can have that, you might challenge their defense a little bit more.
I wanted to jump back to the coaching side of things on the New York element, because Kyle made the comment about how many of their players are going to be returning, whether it be Rob Pinnell from the college game or Max Ebal from injury, et cetera. But you know, they also kind of get their coach back after he's had to split his attention between coaching the Stony Brook women's team, whose season ended last weekend, and the Lizards. You know, you're familiar with this type of split as well. Good luck to the Terps this weekend. What's your thought on what type of impact that could have? Just in terms of, I guess, Joe Spolina being able to pay, singular focus toward this team?
You know, difficult balancing act for sure. I was a, assistant coach, volunteer coach, and doing the MLL thing, so I had it a little bit easier. I couldn't imagine being a head coach, but, I think as long as you're organized and you're a good communicator and you surround yourself with good people and good assistants, it's not a problem, but, I think the Stony Brook programs is big full time jobs, so he had to kind of commit to that as full time. So, but now that that's over, I'm sure he'd be happy to jump back in and get into the nitty gritty of the Lizards right now. But as long as you're a good communicator and you're organized and you kind of know what's going on and kind of see a step ahead of things like Joe does, then he'll be fine.
Well, let's stay in the Mid-Atlantic region as, that didn't make sense. That was a terrible transition, but it's okay because I'm not going to edit it out because, ultimately the point is, Reese, you got a chance to see the Bayhawks 14-5 win over Ohio, last Saturday in, Navy Marine Corps Stadium. And I guess, as you look back at this one, the only slight criticism or whatever I can say, the only kind of negative thing I can say about the Bayhawks is that, they're winning these games by not slim margins. They haven't been tested late in games the way some of, the league's other best teams have been. Otherwise, I really can't pick out any flaws or faults or issues that this team has because not only, Ben Rubior is, a breakout player. If he stops producing or slows down, there are six guys that I think could pick up the slack. They have answers everywhere they turn to issues that haven't popped up but may. I suppose, this is a Bayhawks team that, to a degree at least, is, I would imagine, your legacy. What are your thoughts just on how the Bayhawks have jumped out to a season start unlike many others?
Yeah, I look at them and the same way we did last year. If I'm an opposing coach, what do I do to try to stop the Bayhawks? Who do I try to focus on? Is it, Kyle Dixon or their middies? Then you have John Grant, Ben Rubier, Drew Westerveld. They just have so many weapons that, that can hurt you. Any of those guys, they probably have seven guys that can go off and score six goals a game. Or, they have seven guys that can score two or three each. And, I think the game against Ohio, they moved the ball very well. They passed the ball and they found the open guy. And a lot of times, Ben Rubier down low. He's doing a great job of getting open. But John Gray Jr. doesn't score and he still put up, 14 goals, whatever it is. But, they're just dangerous. They have threats everywhere. And, as long as they play together and stay unselfish, I think they're going to be a very difficult team to stop, unless you have a very hot goalie.
Yeah, just watching them play. Terry, I just want to clarify, you're not sure how good they are because they're too good? Is that what you were saying earlier?
No. I'm not saying I'm not sure how good they are. I think they're excellent. I think that they could be historically good. My point is that only the slightest thing I can say to knock them is they might be a little underprepared for late-game situations because they haven't found themselves in any late-game situations.
Yeah, late-game situations, I can see that. I think, when they played against Rochester Open the season, that was a surprising scoreline, and it was a surprising game because Rochester was kind of still in it, and you were like, how is this happening? And then they pulled away and won, but it was closer than it looked. I think just looking at this team, what else can you say about the Bayhawks? They're amazing. But what also, look at who they played. I actually got a chance to watch this game after not actually seeing Ohio play at all yet. And, ew. is this team worse than last year? Do you guys think this team is worse than last year? Because I kind of think they are.
I'll say the same thing. You know, I don't want to take anything away from the Bayhawks because they're very good, but I was less than impressed at a higher team. It just looked like they, you know, didn't have a plan. They didn't have any kind of structure. It was, you know, I wasn't really sure what they were doing out there, and they did look pretty bad. And I think they have some good players. You know, they're getting some guys into college, but I'm not sure if they're the guys that they need to help them. Their attack is pretty good, you know, and then they were to come in and get three good attackmen, and you know, maybe you move a couple of those guys in midfield, but I don't see those, you know, big, strong two-way guys or, you know, offensive threats from outside that are going to help them and you know, some D-middies. I just don't see that, but, yeah, I was, you know, I don't want to take away anything with the Bayhawks. They do what they're supposed to do when you play a team like that, and they destroyed them. And, you know, the five goals that Ohio scored, were four of them were pretty much of the garbage variety, you know, took three at the end of the game kind of thing and in the second half. But, you know, yeah, I'm with you. I was less than impressed with Ohio.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, the Peter Baum saga continues. Where's Peter Baum? Last week he's got a, you know, he's got a project, you know, this week he's graduating. I mean, you gotta think, like, is Peter Baum watching this game and being like, oh God, I don't want to go there. That looks miserable. I'm going to get beat up. You know, I don't know. And, you know, they do have great players coming in. Holman's having a statistically fantastic year, at UNC. You know, Logan Schuss is awesome to watch, just rolling from the top to his left hand and shooting the ball and feeding the ball and feeding inside and just dominating all facets of play. Those are guys that can change a franchise, but those aren't dodging midfielders. Those aren't guys making good decisions. I just feel like every time I watch Ohio play, it's like, all right, guys, we're going to roll the ball out. Let's play hard. And there's no plan. You're absolutely right. It just looks like there's no plan.
Right, and that would be the point that I would make. But jumping back to the question of who the Bayhawks have played, I mean, you know, there are only so many good teams in this league, and if we think the Lizards are one of the, you know, top two or three, well, top three teams behind, you know, the Bayhawks and the Outlaws, they made them look silly 2 weeks ago, and just totally shut them down defensively in a way that, you know, I haven't really seen good MLL teams get shut down that frequently. Am I wrong? Am I crazy? Is that not something to put stock in?
Oh, you're right. You're right. You know, I think the way – you look at it, too, the way they won those three games. The first game, you know, I think Rochester probably scored a lot more than they probably should have. The Bayhawks offense carried them. And then the second game, 9-3. You know, they won – with their offense, you know, if Ben Rubier, you know, doesn't make the bus, then who knows what happens in that game, you know, but they hold Long Island to three goals. I'm sorry, New York to three goals. And then the following game was just a rout, you know, offense played pretty well. Defense played great. So they've won games in different ways, which is good to see. So, you look at them, you're like, all right, can we just, you know, make this a low scoring game and win? Probably not. You know, their defense is tough. If they play a 6-on-6, you know, advantage Bayhawks, you got to get some easy goals against them. And, I think a team that can run fast from defense to offense, you know, or maybe, you know, win some face-offs and get some transition that way could give them problems. But, you know, you got to make stops to the defensive end to do that. And, you know, I don't think the Bayhawks offense have been spectacular. I think they've been, you know, sloppy at times, but they're getting it done. And when they have an open shot, they have guys can bury them. And 7-6 guys can shoot it and, you know, with the best of them. So they're going to be tough to kind of match up with, but, you know, they've won games different ways, and I think that's pretty impressive.
Well, Kyle, let's move on to the final game of the weekend. Rochester heading down to Charlotte and winning 13-10. You know, it's a game that I think if you're a Charlotte fan, it's a little frustrating to watch. You know, outside of that, not a ton that I took away just from kind of perusing the box score. You know, questions persist. You know, this wasn't a terrible face-off game for the Hounds, but, you know, when are they going to be able to win the possession advantage? And then, in addition to that, you know, kind of where are points going to come from? Obviously, Ryan Young had a huge game. I don't know how reliable that is in the long term. Or what did you see from this that you're going to, you know, kind of pay special attention to?
I mean, the Hounds are going to go as P. Poyot and Matanowski go. And combined, they had 2 points. You're not ever going to win a game. The Hounds are never going to win a game if those two guys put up 2 points. They're lucky Ryan Young came in and scored 7 and had a helper and had 8 points and still somehow didn't get player of the week. The guy that did get player of the week, Ned Crotty, was Ned Crotty again. You know, it's the Ned Crotty from like 2 years ago, much less, you know, last year was a down season. He was very injured, didn't play very well. This game, you know, was his game. He quarterbacked the entire offense. You know, Jordan McIntosh is a consummate finisher. He got the ball inside to him. The Lavelle brothers, you know, gold piece, whichever, it's fine. You know, Mike had an assist as well. They, you know, first game without Millen, you know, they looked more dynamic. I mean, what else can I say? They looked better on offense. They dressed Stephen Boyle, who didn't have a big, you know, stat line, but was still active and running around and occupying his defensemen. I think, you know, going forward, this is probably the Rochester we're going to see. They did put Thomas Wood on IR after this game, and Steve DiNapoli took a shot to the face to end the game to kind of preserve. He took a two-pointer to the face to, like, preserve the win. Pretty heroic play in my eyes. But this game was a lot of guys on the ground, like, rolling around. There was a lot of rolling around in the dirt in this game. I don't really understand what that's all about.
Like soccer rolling around? Was it like Europe, like Mexican soccer league?
Yeah, there was a lot of rolling around on the ground, like, I missed a ground ball, I'm hurt, kind of stuff. Like, nice move, bro. I see you. Good work.
My son's 8-year-old team does it all the time, so, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I know where they got it from.
Although, Joel White sold out for a ball in the end line and, like, jackknifed his body backwards to try and save the ball, and when he went forwards, it looked like he smashed through a signage board, but he actually smashed his face into the turf. So that was an interesting play. Scary actually to watch. It looked like he was like dead for about 3 seconds until he started moving. But he's all right, I guess, according to everything on the call this past week. It was a pretty exciting game, you know, considering it was only 23 goals total. And, you know, the stars didn't really show up except for Crotty. And, you know, the emergence of Ryan Young as one of those guys, not too super surprising. I always thought that, you know, he could get points. I don't know if I ever thought of him as an 8-point scorer, but, he looked good. He abused his defenseman. I mean, he had, and they put everybody on him. It wasn't like he just beat Manly, or Laid all the time. Like he beat everybody up. It didn't matter who was on him. You know, he just went and, it was good. It was good to watch, but, you know, again, faceoffs are an issue. I love T-Fal, but, you know, he's got to get some help in there. They should probably dress two faceoff guys, if I'm honest. They really should.
It's like an NFL team dressing two kickers.
Yeah, that's the problem is, you know, you dress two faceoff guys. You know, are you dressing two bad ones and kind of, you know, putting your team, you know, a little bit underhanded with guys who can actually run? That's always kind of been the, unless you know you have two good ones or it's a matchup thing, it's really hard to dress two faceoff guys. But yeah, that's an area that Charlotte and even Rochester too, they struggled with last year in faceoffs. And I think Ortolani is, you know, kind of the answer for Rochester, but Charlotte, you know, they bring Jeff Snatter in, pretty soon, hopefully, and they can answer to that. But that's an area they got to improve on.
Well, fellas, I want to shift gears a little bit, open up the conversation because, you know, it was funny just kind of, Hearing Kyle talk about, I always thought Ryan Young could be a player that could score in the league, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, Ryan Young, he's in his third season, and we've seen this, you know, kind of transition from an old guard to a new guard, and, you know, that took a further step last week as Brian Langtree announced his retirement after starting the season with the New York Lizards. We've all made the mistake now, so I think that we can each, you know, just kind of offer it up to the ML of gods, but you know, Reese, you're a guy that knows Langtree well, haven't spent a lot of time with him in Denver, and, you know, Kyle, you did a nice interview with him that posted on InsideTheCross.com in the middle of this week that, you know, in my mind just really perfectly captured the crazy that he is. I don't really know where to begin in terms of a line of questioning, but Brian, when you think back to having a professional working relationship with Brian Langtree, how many oxymorons are in that statement?
Yeah, you're right. He's probably a walking oxymoron. It's a good way to put it, but you know, You want guys in this league to care, and you want your guys to be passionate, and you want your guys to, you know, put absolutely everything into their sport and to their craft. And Langtree's a guy that does that. Is he perfect? By no means. Does he make mistakes? Or, you know, plenty. I mean, he makes tons of mistakes, and, you know, there's some times where you want to just turn them off or knock them out or put them to sleep for a while. But, you know, he genuinely cares about his team. He cares about, you know, the game he's playing. It's the most important thing to him in the world, you know, aside from his family and kids. And he gives everything. And you can never fault a guy who makes mistakes, you know, just by caring too much. And he's, you know, he's that guy. But I thought Kyle did a great job in his article kind of summing it up. And I think the best thing you can do is just ask Brian and actually open any questions and let him go, because he's a smart, witty, pretty funny guy. And, you know, you can see from that article, some of the, maybe the insecurities he had as a player that always kind of motivated him and fueled him, you know, like, you know, he probably thought he was going to get cut every week, and he knew every practice he had to perform and every game he had to perform, or else he thought he would probably get cut. Whether that's true or not, you know, I doubt it is, because he's a gifted player, but that motivated him, so it worked out pretty well.
Cal, you know, one of the things, and it touched on a lot of what Reese just said there, that I think everybody that got an opportunity to watch Brian Langford play liked watching him play for, you know, their own personal reasons, but if there was one communal one, it was that, you know, he was always liable to do something unexpected, you know, whether that was going to be pick a fight with an opponent or, you know, pull off some ridiculous goal that you wouldn't think that a kid from Long Island would be able to do, but it was born out of his long career in the NLL, or, you know, just big hits. You know, he was good for all of it. What's the thing that you think you're going to miss most about the opportunity to watch Brian Langtry on a week-to-week basis?
I mean, I've said this from the beginning, and my whole lacrosse, you know, base philosophy is I admire toughness over all other aspects. If you are tough and you can take a hit and you can dish a hit and you don't have to be dirty about it, you know, that goes a long way. I think that's one of the best characteristics you can have as a lacrosse player and honestly as a person. You know what I mean? Like I really respect anybody, any tough person out there at all, you know, and he was tough, and that's one of the things that I will remember the most is dude was tough, and you know he was funny too. You know he was a funny guy. Like I make fun of a ton of people, you know, and I do it, you know, not because I'm mean. I do it to like entertain people. I think it's funny. Make fun of myself. Like you shouldn't take yourself as I make fun of other people, and you know I think he's one of the few players that got that. About my style of writing and also his style of play. Like he was just like, you know what? I actually had to go back and get him to talk about the check incident, as I call it, in 2009, where he got the check and Quint was like, you know, what motivates you? He's like, oh man, this money, man. I didn't get this money. Like that was probably one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And people like were like criticizing him about it because they didn't get it. You know, it's so funny to like see stuff like that and to see like kind of how he really felt about his career. I mean, that was unexpected. I didn't know that, you know, and that's why I kind of did it. I wanted to give him a forum and I take zero credit for that article. All I did was like throw some questions together and we talked about a couple and I put in his responses verbatim, you know, yeah. Didn't really make any grammatical corrections like that. That was all him. And it was good to see his point of view. And I think he deserves, you know, all the credit in the world for being a transcendent player that played, you know, like we said, played off his insecurities and used other aspects of his game, his toughness, his shooting ability to be one of the best in the world at one point. You know, I think that's worth saying.
That was kind of one question.
I'm glad you pointed out his toughness because that's something that goes unnoticed sometimes. But he's a guy who's not afraid of anything, anybody, any situations. He'll give up his body. He'll take a beating to you know, help his team and get a goal, you know, whatever it is to help the team. That's what he does. And I think he's got that kind of like, he kind of enjoys it. You know, he's the kind of guy that when we played against Long Island and they had Spleen and Blanco, he eggs them on. He wants them to beat the hell out of him, you know. Maybe it helps the teammates or kind of gets them off their game or whatever, but he encourages that. And then when they do, he has like a witty, funny statement to like, you know, almost like it doesn't bother him at all that he's actually enjoying it. And it's, you know, he's a great guy, you know, the great guy to have on the team in the locker room. And I can't say enough good things about him.
I wanted to jump in there. You mentioned the term best player in the world jumped out to me. And I think that's true to a degree, but, correct if I'm wrong, he never played on a world team. You know, I don't really remember him ever being in the mix for that. And so, you know, I think about it from the perspective of if there were an MLL Hall of Fame, would Brian Langtry be a part of it? And it's funny because I think he put together one of those careers that, you know, he was always the type of guy that if this were, and, you know, Reese, to your credit, obviously, you managed to keep him in Denver, but it seems like he would have always been the type of guy that either GMs would have come to you and say, you know, what about Landry? Can you throw him into a deal? And you would say no. But if you're on the flip side of it, you'd always be asking about him. But at the same time, you know, if your team brought him in, I don't think your fans would get that excited because they weren't, you know, he wasn't overt, with the exception of a couple years where I think he got around 40 points. He wasn't, you know, an overt threat. If there were an MLB Hall of Fame, do you guys feel like Brian Landry would be in it?
Personally, yeah, I put him first ballot MLB. You know, Hall of Fame, I think he should even get credit for the NLL. Is he a huge name? No. I mean, he didn't come from a great, you know, he wasn't a college star. You know, he played at Hofstra, and he's turned quite tough, and, you know, but he didn't have an outstanding career. Maybe it was so long ago that people didn't really notice what was going on back then, and we didn't have all the games on TV, but he was a phenomenal college player. And then he kind of, you know, maybe take a couple years off, didn't really crack an NLL roster for a while, and he was Rookie of the Year at, like, 26 or something like that, but you know, was around, you know, the MLL here and there, and then Denver became his home. And you go in Denver, Brian Landry is like, you know, a guy out there in the world of lacrosse. You know, people know who he is, whether you're a lacrosse fan or not. You know, he's kind of the face of the sport out there in Colorado. Maybe not so much, you know, Long Island, Baltimore, kind of different areas. He might not get that love, but the people out there who could watch him play every day and kind of saw the way he was in the community with kids and, you know, talking to fans, I mean, he was great. So he's, you know, if the Outlaws ever have a Hall of Fame, he'd probably be the first guy they would, you know, put in there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could go on the strength of his campaigns in Denver alone, you know, all the way through, even though, you know, his last year he only had, you know, 12 points, you know, 6 goals, 6 assists. But, you know, he had a 47-point season in 2008. I mean, that's crazy. That's like big points, and he played midfield. It's not like he was like slash attack, like all that stuff. You know, he played midfield. He played tough midfield. He went at people. You know, that's not to be ignored, especially at that time in the league. You know, it's not like he got all those points against San Francisco, you know, or like the Chicago franchise. I mean, he was an excellent. Was he MLB first team? They don't even really keep track of that back then.
I don't know. I don't know if he MLB to anybody there, but yeah, I mean, and the thing about Landry is he always had a kind of a book on him, I guess, that, oh, he's a selfish player. He's out for himself. He's just trying to score goals. But you look at his assists, and he was one of the top 5 in assists in the entire league as a middie. You know, that said something, that he had the ball on his stick and he's always got his head up to make the right play. Now, he'd be behind guys like Boyle and Connor Gill, and then it'd be, you know, maybe Brian Langtree would be like third or fourth on the list. So he moved the ball well. And I think, you know, kind of going back to it, he's not the guy that you could put in your team, like you're our number one guy and you're going to go run through everybody and score. But he knows how to get open and get other guys open as well. So when you put him out there with, you know, Seabold or Sims or Sankey or whatever, those guys could dodge hard, and, you know, Brian would find a way to either get them open with pick and roll, stuff like that, or, you know, pop open to get his shot off or kind of make that, you know, the next pass. So that's where kind of he put in. You know, if I have 2 of the best middies in the league, I don't care who they are, I could put Brian Landry as the third guy and we could be pretty darn good because he's going to make the right play every time.
Well, Kyle, you already mentioned it. The Hamilton Nationals face off in about an hour here versus the Charlotte Hounds as a part of Kids Day. Or you know, kind of however that shakes out. And then moving on through the rest of the weekend, Chesapeake heading up to Boston. That's going to be a big one. New York heading out to Ohio, and Rochester heading out to Denver. Anything in particular that you're looking for this weekend, Kyle?
I'm looking for Chesapeake-Boston to be actually a good game. I hope it is, you know, for everyone's sake, regardless of the result. I hope that it's a really good game, and Boston continues to play, you know, Reese was right, that's the best they've played all season. They looked way worse in the other 2 games than they did in that game. I think someone tweeted me on Twitter, they were like, did someone say that they actually played well? Cause I don't know what game they were watching. And, you know, I think it was in response to, you know, how they played in the first 2 weeks, which right. I equated to drunk toddlers playing with dull knives. But you know, I think that they are in a good position. I think that I've heard some rumblings that there might be a deal. And the deal might be with Boston and Ohio. And I can't really say the principles, but I've heard heard a rumor. I think it's a crazy rumor. Terry, I think you and I have discussed it. I don't think we can make it public yet, but
Kyle, come on. You're an insider. This is the time you're supposed to, like, you know, show that off. So what's the deal? What's the inside deal? Come on. You can't just say that and tease people and not
inside
tell them.
Inside deal. I've heard a trade floated. Buchanan for Hartzell. I think it's a mistake. I followed up on it with a couple sources yesterday. Didn't really get it confirmed, but didn't get it shot down either. So could be happening, could not be happening. I'll float it out there. I teased it on Twitter, and now hopefully, Reeser, I hope you're happy. You got me to say it. But
Thank you. I appreciate it. No,
you would be like,
do you make that deal? Do you make that deal if you're Boston or Ohio?
No. Buchanan's too good.
If you're Boston, do you make that deal? Right.
No.
Yeah.
No. Unless Ratliff's not coming. If Ratliff's not coming, then you think about it, and you hopefully get another omid in return, except Ohio has no omids. So what are you going to get? You know, are you going to get one of the attackmen, you know? I mean, do you get, like, Peter Baum, who's never going to show up? Like, what's the deal? You know, there has to be more to that deal. But and I think there is. That's just the principle that I was teased. So, Terry, what do you think about that?
That's why you're the best insider in the biz.
Kyle, you would be a terrible source. Can't keep anything. You can't keep anything close to the. Well, I mean, good for the writer, terrible for the organization. But I wouldn't do the deal either. I mean, I think that I understand for Ohio, kind of like the pop that Buchanan brings, and obviously, you know, an Ohio State guy, there's a local tie. But if we're pointing the problem as being a part of, you know, just a plan, like, I think that to me, what I've always liked about Buchanan's game the most is his versatility, his ability to wing dodge. You can keep him on the field all the time, or you can run him out of the box. You know, you don't really want to get him caught back on defense, but if it happens, it's probably not, you know, the worst thing in the world on a, you know, couple, you know, maybe once or twice a game type basis. But I think that's, you know, again, I don't necessarily think that's what Ohio needs. I mean, you know, they're kind of like the Cleveland Browns. They need pieces all over the place, and you can't be giving up not only somebody who you know is reliable, and to a degree, I think Kyle Hartzell is he wouldn't be putting up the type of points he'd be putting up here. He put up last year on, pretty much any other team in the league. That being said,
he wouldn't be playing man up for Boston, you don't think?
That's what I'm saying. I think that he's, he's more valuable in Ohio than he would be anywhere else as well. Not just because of his offensive pop, but just because of, you know, kind of his consistency, the fact that he's, you know, he's been around the league for a while on a team that doesn't have a lot of guys like that. I don't know. I don't like to trade for either team. Reese, what do you think?
I agree.
Well,
I think it's
from another source. So it's okay.
For Boston. Okay, fair enough. But yeah, I don't think that's I think Boston's got three poles coming in that can handle the ball and do what Kyle Hartzell did. But, you know, Farrell can do that. PT Reach is pretty good at that. And, you know, Ratliff, I think, will be a great, you know, player in that role. So unless one of those guys or two of those guys aren't playing,
Ricci has a broken thumb. Exciting. Oh, no one's supposed to know that. I know that. Yay! I'm a reporter! Sorry. I just think it's funny. But yeah, he has a broken thumb, so he's not going to play.
Not a broken thumb is going on in Boston. Jordan Burke.
Yeah, he's got a broken hand, so he's out for a while, too. Yeah, they got injuries too. It's not like it's just we're terrible. It's like, you know, we lost a bunch of guys. You know, we got to lean on Gable to stop shots. I mean, there's worse guys to lean on, but it's his first year with the team. So,
but going
we'll
back
see.
To the game,
I feel like all I do is talk about Boston because I'm like close to the team geographically.
Everybody knows you're a Boston homer. So,
well, maybe you should check out the issue of Inside the Cross. With the Chesapeake Bayhawks on the cover that I wrote the story for.
Well, deserving.
I don't know
about
that.
But, you know, going back to the game here, you know, just kind of knowing the rivalry between the Bayhawks and Boston, I think the Bayhawks would love to go 4-0, but I think that even more than that, they want to put Boston to 0-4. And, you know, if they do that, then it's going to be nearly impossible for them to come back and clinch a playoff spot. So I think, you know, I think that kind of motivates the Bayhawks too. So it's going to be a good game up there. You know, I think it's going to be an uphill battle for the BayHawks. It's kind of, you know, just knowing the way that Boston officiates, and they're going to be, you know, they don't want to see Boston go 0-4 as well. So, you know, the BayHawks are going to have to beat the Cannons, and they're going to have to beat the officials and everything else going up there in Boston. So it should be an interesting game.
Shots fired.
Yeah, I was going to say, the last 10 minutes shots of this fired. Podcast has been very controversial.
That's, you know, that's a whole another podcast if we were to do that. But, you know, every team's got a home field advantage, right? And Boston's got theirs, so.
That's right. Well, that's right. Harvest.
Let me ask a question. So we've kind of talked about this privately. What is the deal with the MLS production? Like, what is going on this year? This has been the worst year for seeing games, YouTube, like all this weird stuff is going on. Like, what is happening? What have you've called a game? What's the issue? Like, what's going on? Like, what have you seen?
It's really my first time being on the other side of that. So it's hard to really, you know, aside from just watching games on TV and, you know, watching film and that kind of stuff, it's hard for me to kind of compare that, you know, but I don't know. So I don't know if it's been that way for a while. You know, I don't watch games on YouTube or the internet, you know, so, you know, unless it's ESPN3 and I'm, you know, kind of rewatching something and, you know, it's, I think the league could definitely use a higher production value, and, you know, I think ESPN did a great job with their college games, and I would love to kind of see that kind of carry over to the MLL, but, you know, I know it's, you know, not just one party. It's, you know, a lot of different factors that go into that, so. Plus, you know, I think they need, I think they need better announcers like you and me, Kyle, so if you have that, then all the games become better.
I did propose a three-man booth this week. No one came calling, surprisingly enough. It was weird. I thought someone might bite, but I guess not. It's okay.
Oh, well.
Not mad.
But you're a little mad.
No, I'm not hating. I don't know what I'm doing. I wouldn't let me in.
Yeah, you wouldn't pick mine. You wouldn't pick yourself. It's bad enough that you're in a three-man booth right here.
Yeah, I saw Reeser on TV, though. Is that your living room, man? You couldn't put up a retired jersey or anything? Nothing? You got, like, a diploma on the back wall inside the MLL? What's up with that? I thought you'd have some flash.
You can buy them at Walmart. You can get any kind of diploma you want. You just put your name on it. It's no big deal. I actually thought they'd have one of those, you know, green screens and put, like, a nice little backdrop behind me, but oh well.
All right. I think the train's come off the tracks, and we're gonna have to put a cap on this one. So, Brian Reese, thank you very much for joining us on this issue edition. I don't know why I call it issue all the time. I gotta clean it up here.
You're a magazine guy. We're internet guys.
Yeah, exactly. And we will come back at you, everybody listening to this that's made it this far. We'll come back at you next week with a new edition of the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast.
Well, last thing, Terry.
Shout out.
You almost put the shout out.
Can't you just shout out to Reese and then we'll be done with it?
No, this one's actually serious. One of my players that I coached a couple years ago passed away in Kandahar. Mitch Daling, shout out. He's a good kid. It just sucks to lose a player. I've never lost one before, and you know, it makes me feel terrible. And you know, also vindicates kind of everything I'm trying to do, like just trying to be honest with people. And he was a good kid. He was honest with people to a fault. I really liked him a lot, and he'll be missed. So, Mitch Daling, RIP. Shout out.
Appreciate his sacrifice and everything he does to the country. So,
thanks.
That'll do it for this edition of the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Inside Lacrosse Podcast.